Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hungry Planet when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools and banned from our public institutions and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place. And they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools, our public institutions, and we've made them a part of our national psyche. You know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years. Are you aware, for instance, that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? That's why I contend that the solution to this kind of moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. And there's still at least one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, commandments, and penalties, as well as the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what that penalty is to suffer from its effects. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, or Karma, or something else, it's automatic and it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Then it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org. If you'll click onto our archives page, you can download it right there in your on your own computer. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page. Download it right there. All right, last time I said we'd take a look at this, the PCBs put out by the Monsanto Corporation back in the 1960s. PCBs, if you'll remember, was a deadly toxin used in transformers for the electric power industry. And they had a plant down in Georgia, and not Georgia's Alabama. And this plant in Alabama put these PCBs into landfills, run down their creeks and one thing and another. And there's quite a little story about that. Well, in this article here talking about Monsanto and their corporate responsibility and whether or not we can depend on Monsanto to be responsible, let's listen to the story. The Washington Post already exposed some of Monsanto's prior deceptive practices in January of 2002 when staff writer Michael Grunewald published Monsanto Hid Decades of Pollution. PCBs drenched Alabama town, but no one was ever told. Well, Grunewald explains that for nearly 40 years, while producing the now banned industrial coolants known as PCBs at a local factory, the Monsanto company routinely discharged a toxic waste into a community creek in Anniston, Alabama, and then dumped millions of pounds of PCBs into open pit landfills. He also published some of what was thousands of pages of Monsanto documents, many with warnings, such as confidential, read, and destroy. And they show that for decades the corporate giant concealed what it did and what it knew. Well, Grunewald states that documents reveal that in the fall of 1966, Monsanto hired a Mississippi State University biologist named Denzel Ferguson to conduct some studies around its Anniston plant. Well, Ferguson arrived with tanks full of bluegill fish. This is what he reported to Monsanto about the results in Snow Creek. It says, quote, all 25 fish lost equilibrium and turned on their sides in 10 seconds, and all were dead in 3.5 minutes. I've never seen anything quite like it in my life, said Mac Finley. He was another former Ferguson graduate student, now an aquatic biologist at Austin, PA State University. And their skin, he said, would literally slough off like a blood blister on the bottom of your foot. It was like dunking the fish in battery acid, recalled George Murphy. He was another one of Ferguson's graduate students. The problem, Ferguson concluded, was the extremely toxic wastewater flowing directly from the Monsanto plant into Snow Creek and then into the larger Chocoloca Creek, that's an odd name, Chocoloca, I believe it is, where he noted similar die-offs. The outflow, he calculated, would kill fish when diluted 1,000 times. and he warned Monsanto that since this is a surface stream that passes through residential areas, it may represent a potential source of danger to children. He urged Monsanto to clean up Snow Creek and to stop dumping untreated waste there. Monsanto didn't do that, even though the warnings continued. Now, think about that for a second. That's normal. That's not unusual. The tobacco industry did it for 40 years. And you see it with BP down in the Gulf with this oil spill right now today. They're doing the same thing. They're covering up. They're protecting their corporate image. They're protecting their market share. And it's part and parcel with the corporate mentality. It's part and parcel with what big business does. It shouldn't be a surprise to us. So how should you and I then deal with companies like Monsanto and ADM and Cargill and et cetera? Well, you know, you support something by buying the product. Every time you buy these products, you support that corporation. Why don't you stop buying the products that these people put out there to kill you? I mean, it can't be any simpler than that. Now, it may well be that the argument goes, well, my withholding, my vote doesn't count, or my withholding, my refusal to buy that product isn't going to change anything. Well, yeah, it will. Yeah, well, it's called market share. When your market share goes to somebody else, let's take Baker Creek Seeds up here, for instance. The Monsanto people and Pioneer Seed and Northrop King, all these big multinational corporations have an agenda. They got a goal. They want to control the seed industry worldwide. And they set out to do that back in the 1960s. So far, they have succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. There are just a few little small open-pollinated seed companies left alive, which just exactly suits the corporate model. They would prefer that there be none of them left alive, but the fact that there are a few that are still out there functioning like Baker Creek Seeds serves to promote the illusion of transparency and freedom in the marketplace. Now, the little seed companies don't control 1% of the seed business. To give you an illustration, I have open pollinated seed here, and I know of three or four sources for obtaining open pollinated seed. Here in America, we have 300 million people. If, just perchance, if the people of America all decided tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock that they were going to buy open pollinated seed and that they were not going to support Monsanto and GMOs anymore, do you know what would happen? Okay, for openers, the little seed companies out here would do a land office business, which would take a little bit more of market share, might go up to 2%. And then all of a sudden, the little seed companies would prosper. They would make profits, and so they would put in more seed and they would supply more of the demand. And then ultimately, as time progresses along, they would take market share. And Monsanto would say, you know, maybe we ought to produce some of this to take a share of it. And I'll give you an illustration. You take organic food. 20 years ago, the only people that were producing organic food were the hippies and then the nutso types, you know, the hippie, long-haired, organic food kind of weirdo vegetarians. Hell, big mainstream companies like Walmart now have organic produce and products in their stores. And that's because the people have decided that they want to buy organic. And so it isn't that you change everything overnight. It's that you just change it $1 at a time. So when you don't buy Wheat Thins, it sends a signal to the Nabisco company that says, gee, we lost some market share. Well, where did the market share go? What went over to this other company? Now these people are buying this. Well, then maybe we better go over there and make some of that. That's the way things get changed. Going on, the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. Department of Agriculture are charged with overseeing and monitoring the safety of our food supply. But as history shows, many former Monsanto executives have become high-ranking appointees and top-ranking officials in these agencies. Now, you talk about the fox guarding the hen house. It's very true. You know, Monsanto placed the head, I believe it was the head of the FDA, was taken from Monsanto. Then he served there for a couple, 3 years or four, and then he left and went back to Monsanto. The regulators, that is the Department of Agriculture, the government, and so on, the senators and representatives, they get paid off. They're being bribed. It's called campaign contributions. In this country, we don't bribe people because it's against the law. We give them campaign contributions. We just change the name of it and write the check out to a different entity. But it goes to the same person, and that person is expected then to vote the way we want them to vote. And the Congress votes the way Monsanto wants them to vote. And that's because you keep electing these guys back to office. You do not know how your senator or representative votes on these issues like GMO. And you don't care. I mean, the average Joe Sixpack American couldn't care less. And so as a result of that, he gets what he pays for. He doesn't care. The same thing is true with the average Joe Sixpack American doesn't care about GMOs being in his food. Now, the English do, the French do, the Germans do, and they've banned it. They don't have it in Europe, or very little of it. But here in the United States, we don't care, and so therefore we've got more of it. Now remember, Monsanto was told they knew, but an Associated Press investigation revealed contracts detailing Monsanto, the world's biggest seed developer, is squeezing out competitors, controlling smaller seed companies, and protecting its control over the multi-billion dollar seed market for genetically altered crops. Now, if farmers would stop buying that and buy open pollinated seeds, you know, from guys like Baker Creek Seeds, then you could stop that. If you people would stop buying that in the supermarkets, then the farmers couldn't sell what they're growing, the elevators wouldn't handle it, and Monsanto would be out of the GMO business. But again, you know, it's what we buy, and we, the public out here, are buying the GMOs, and as long as we buy the GMOs, they're going to give us more of it. The multinational corporations aren't filled with a bunch of dummies. They're going to supply you what you'll eat. Now, they have an agenda. They want to sell that to you, but if you won't buy it, they'll sell you what you do want to buy. And you vote with your dollar at the checkout stand, just that simple. That's what you're buying out of the supermarket. And Walmart was smart enough to figure that out. And they said the reason that we're putting in more organic foods is because that's what our customers are telling us that they want. And they tell us that that's what they want, buy what they buy at the checkout counter. So when they're checking out and they're not buying the GMO and they're buying organic, well, then that tells us that's what they want and that's what we're going to give them. Now, there was a milk additive here. It's called RBGH. And people didn't buy the RBGH milk, and so I think it was Walmart the other day said that they're phasing it out, and pretty shortly they're going to make sure they don't have any of that milk in there. And so it is effective, and that's the way the game is played, and that's the way it works. Monsanto's patented genes are inserted into roughly 95% of soybeans and 80% of corn crops grown in the United States, according to a review of several Monsanto licensing agreements and dozens of interviews with seed industry participants, agriculture and legal experts. Well, that's true. 5% of the soybeans grown in the country go into the organic trade. So to avoid it, buy organic. Anything that says soybeans, corn, high fructose corn syrup, if it's made out of any product that comes from corn, soybeans, canola, or cotton, and then it's GM. So just look at the label and then avoid that. And then from time to time, you know, you point that out to your store that you're buying from. Say, you know, I like Wheat Thins, but I don't want to buy the GMO ingredients that go in it. And the same thing happens if you drop a note off or an email off to Nabisco and you tell them, you know, I like your products, but you've got GMOs in them, and I'm not going to buy your product as long as you've got that GMO in it. So when it changes, I'll change. Now, your letter doesn't mean jack squat, but your letter is not ignored. Not ignored. See, I'm an old-timey corporate executive, and I can tell you from personal experience. We ignore the buying public at our own peril, and all of us that are in the business world know that. And the buying public is fickle, and they change on a dime. What was popular one day, the next week you can't give away. And as a result of that, you'll note that some companies like Studebaker and Packard have gone out of business because they weren't paying attention to what the public wanted. After World War II, the auto companies were swamped with orders. You could sell anything that had a motor in it. But a motor and four wheels, you could sell it. And so these companies like Studebaker and Packard and Hudson and so on, they made cars, but they didn't make what the public wanted. And so instead of paying attention to what the public was buying, they paid attention to what they were selling, and they just made more of it. And the companies that were concerned about what the public wanted, what the public was buying, you know, more chrome, more fins, more power, more longer, lower, and wider, you know, those are the companies that prospered. That was Ford and General Motors, and their models sold. And pretty soon, the other companies faded and went out of business and were merged, and they lost their market share. And one day, they woke up and said, gee, what happened? It's the way life is. Same thing happens, you know, in clothing, apparel, and furniture, and so on. You know, you got to sell people what they want. So if you want genetically modified organisms or you don't care, just keep on buying just like you have been, and everything will be fine. If you do care, then you change. Now, I can avoid just about all of the GMOs, and I do. We grow a lot here. We raise our own beef and our own sheep, and we concentrate on reading the labels on the packages, and we're familiar with what the GMO boys are up to and what they're selling, and then we avoid that. In fact, we make it a point of telling our suppliers, you know, we say, now, we don't eat that, we don't buy that, and when you change, we'll come back to your product, and if you don't, we won't. Now, they keep track of those. They put those in the file cabinet, and they say, okay, this is a crank. By the time they get 10 of those, they say, wait a minute, is this a trend, or is this something else? And that's because only about 1 or 2% of people actually write a letter. I think it's 2%. I mean, you may be just mad as hell, but only two people that are mad as hell are going to write a letter to somebody and tell them. So when they get two letters, they say, oh, that represents 100 people. You know, when they get a letter, that represents 50 more people. So by the time they get 10, 15, 20 letters in there, they multiply that times 50, and they say, wait a minute, now we got several thousand people here, and these several thousand people aren't buying our product because. And that's what happened in the milk industry. See, there were enough people that said, we're not going to buy that RBGH milk. And so Walmart the other day announced they're going to phase it out. They're not going to carry it. That sends a message to all the dairymen out there in advance. It says, if you've got RBGH milk, we ain't buying it from you. And if you don't have RBGH, that's where we're going to buy our milk, because that's what we're going to carry. That's what our customers want. So tuck that one away in your heart. If you've said, well, I don't think we've got very much buying power, we don't have very much power, that's not true. All right, now that being the case, then the Food and Drug Administration and the United States Department of Agriculture are charged then with overseeing and monitoring the safety of our food supply. But now, as history shows, many former Monsanto executives have become high-ranking appointees and top-ranking officials in these agencies. That isn't something new. That's just started in the Obama administration. It's been going on for years and years. Called the spoils system. And it happens in automobiles. You saw it with the Toyotas the other day. And they weren't being regulated. It's because the auto industry controls the regulators that regulate the auto industry. And you just saw it the other day down in the Gulf. The oil companies control the regulators that control the oil industry. And the only time there's a major shakeup is when there's a disaster that occurs, such as the Toyota cars, and they had to recall, I don't know, several million of them, or the oil spill in the Gulf. Now, that'll generate some change. It always has in the past, and it will again. Now, has the public safety of Americans been sold out to mad scientists for cash and promises of controlling the world? You know, he who controls the food controls the world, and this is what they're after. And they're succeeding. And pointed this out, I think, the other day, that we used to have a 71-day supply of food back in the 1970s. Today it's down to 38 days. Now, I've come up with 16 reasons why I think we've passed the point of no return. You know, as a youngster, I used to fly airplanes, and one time I flew up to Anchorage, Alaska, and I elected to go up what's known as the Rocky Mountain Trench. When you leave Prince George, the next stop is Watson Lake. Well, you can fly up the trench to the halfway point. Then right about the halfway point is where you've got enough gas to get to Watson Lake, but now you don't have enough gas to get back to Prince George. And that's where we're at here with our agriculture in the world. So when we look at a prophecy here in Revelation chapter 6, let me just give you a little illustration here is what I'm talking about when we get to this point of no return. In Revelation chapter 6, under famine, verse 5, it says, and when he had opened the third seal, I heard the third beast say, come and see, and I beheld, and lo, a black horse, and he that sat on him had a pair of balances in his hand. And I heard a voice in the midst of the four beasts say, a measure of wheat for a penny, and three measures of barley for a penny, and see that you hurt not the oil and the wine. Now, that's talking about famine, and you'll see that in Matthew 24, verse 7. This chapter 6 of Revelation is explained in Matthew 24. That's what this is explaining. Now, the very next verse here, verse 7, talking about disease and epidemics. Now, listen to how it opens this up and explains it. And when he had opened the fourth seal, I heard the voice of the fourth beast say, come and see. So I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death and Hell. And power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with the sword, with hunger, with death, and with the beasts of the earth. And so now you take a look at, you get these four horsemen. And so now in verse 8, the fourth seal is open, and it's the fourth part of the earth. Now the fourth part of the earth is 1,750 million people. That's about 160 New York cities. 160 are going to be destroyed. They're going to be killed. They're going to die. Now, how did God know that? Well, he's the guy that's bringing it to pass. See, if he predicted it in advance, he's a good guesser. But if he's got the power and he's got the ability that he can move nations, control the weather, control the volcanoes, and so on, then he can bring that to pass. And so I wrote down 16 indices here that tell me that we've passed the tipping point and that from now on it's downhill, that agriculture cannot support the world's population. We're going into famine. And here's a guy, we call him God, in Revelation 6, says, here's what I'm going to do to you guys. And he's got two indices here, number 15 and 16 in my list. He says in Revelation 11, verse 18, I'm going to destroy those that destroy the earth. That's the Monsantos of the world, the ADMs, the Cargills, the politicians. And in Leviticus 26, verse 25, he says, I'm going to avenge the quarrel of my covenant. So here at the law school, we code plead this out. It's a very simple thing to figure out. Religious people haven't got a clue as to why God is behaving this way, why he's going postal on us. And the answer is, he said, I'm a jealous God, and you've provoked me to anger. He's got emotions, just like we do. And he says, now you provoked me to anger, and I'm a jealous God, and I told you that in Exodus 34, 10 through 17. And now you're giving me the finger. You're putting the branch to my nose. And we saw that in Ezekiel, the branch. Look up that word branch. You're putting the branch to your nose, which is an obelisk. That branch, if you'll check out the word, is an obelisk. An obelisk is a penis. You're putting the penis to my nose. Now take a look at the middle finger of your right hand, okay? Hold it up, bring the other two fingers down, called giving the finger to God. Now, there's a limit to how far you can go before you get beyond the tipping point here. Okay? Now, I suspect that this oil spill out in the Gulf is an example of Hurricane Katrina or the like, you know, like event. We've gone beyond the point of no return here. this thing looks more and more like it's got the fingerprints of God all over it, just like Katrina has its fingerprints all over it. So the answer to your question is, avenge the quarrel of my covenant, Leviticus 26:25. We're in breach of contract, and he's going to invoke the clause in the contract that calls for a punishment or a penal clause, a penalty for non-specific performance. And he says, I'm going to destroy those that destroy the earth. And so those who are out busily destroying the earth, building the Aswan Dam in Egypt, which destroyed the fertility of the Nile Valley, the people that have come up with these GMO seeds and foods, hybridized seed, and so on, you know, there's a limit to how far we can go before we engender a reaction. Let's see here. We're at about 29 minutes. Let me give you your mid-course review here. I have to give you a reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review that were sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, go to our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org, and go to the archives page. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. We often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book, Hungry Planet. Let me give you a little information here on the book. It's a pictorial book, Hungry Planet, written by Peter Menzel and Faith D'Aluzio. Faith, a female woman, female, D, apostrophe, A-L-U-I-S-I-O, and Peter Menzel, M-E-N-Z-E-L. The thing that caught my eye on this book and brought in here from Baker Creek Seeds. There are 12 examples in here of families around the world that are feeding their families on less than a dollar per meal per day. Or, it's 3 meals a day. They've got the food in front of the family portrait, and they're taking a picture of these people, showing you where they get their food and what kind of foods they eat. Different people, eat different foods in different places. They procure their food, some of them by growing some of it by eating in the local market, some of them in the cities. Some of these people live in villages, some of them live on farms, some of them live in big cities or small villages and so on. All of them are full-fleshed. Nobody's starving to death. Nobody's hungry here. Everybody's eating. Now, they eat some pretty strange stuff, Chinese and Ecuadorians, and Guatemalans, they eat different stuff. With the exception of Coca-Cola. That is so, around the world, there's so much Coca-Cola that, normal people drink Coke. The highest priced guy in here, $5.95 a day, it's a German family. The lowest priced guy in here is 20 or 15 people live in Mali, M-A-L-I, Africa, black family, feeding their family on 8 cents per meal per person. Be 24 cents a day. I was very impressed with that, and I said, that's important because a lot of us are going to be faced with that very same problem. One of the first things that happens with the destruction of our money, which is one of the 16 indices here, the destruction of our money says that we're not going to be able to import all this food that we're now importing. Half of our food here in America is being imported. Now remember, you Europeans, you got the same problem. Remember when that volcano went off in Iceland, you couldn't get fruits and vegetables. It's coming from Kenya or Zambia or someplace else. Well, that's what's happened here in America. See, we used to be self-sufficient in food. We're no longer self-sufficient. We're hiring people in Mexico, Guatemala, Chile, and around the world, and we fly it in on 747s. And as long as the system holds up and the economic system is flourishing, everything's fine. It's the breakdown of the system that is inevitable. And when that system breaks down, there's going to be famine. Big time famine. It's coming to America, Canada, Australia, and Western Europe, like it or lump it. First of all, your God says he's going to bring it upon you because you deserve it. But secondly, because of the policies that are being followed by our governments. We are following the policies. We are practicing the practices that guarantee it. Now, I'm a farmer, and so I'm watching, and I'm watching the events transpire that are bringing it upon us. Okay, so this book now is called Hungry Planet, and Peter Menzel, Faith D'Aluzio. That's book number one. Book number two is Genetic Roulette. Book number three, Seeds of Deception. Write those two down. Genetic Roulette, Seeds of Destruction. Prices on these books are around $30 each, I would guess. For those of us here in the United States, no big deal. For those of you in Ecuador making $135 a month, that's a heartbreaker, I'm sure. Jeffrey M. Smith is the writer of Genetic Roulette and Seeds of Destruction. I believe that's what the name of it was. Seeds of Destruction, I believe. Deception. Seeds of Deception. That's what it is. It's not destruction, it's deception. All right, Jeffrey M. Smith. Now, you can get these three books from Baker Creek Seeds, Mansfield, Missouri. That's all the address I've got. That's about all the address you'd need here, just Mansfield, Missouri. You might look up the zip code if you want. You can probably pull out their phone number. Here's where they are online. It's called heirloomseeds.com, heirloomseeds.com. And you can get the information right there. Now, with that out of the way, we took on the subject here of GMOs going along with this. The GMO problem is that these GMOs kill us. They cause a lot of damage and death to animals in the laboratory. No human experiments are on record. We don't want any human experiments because the animal experiments tell us just about the answer that nobody wants to hear, and that is it's a killer. That's what's happening. It's killing you. It is a big experiment. It causes sterility. I've got an article here I pulled out. They've been using, you know, this in laboratory animals, feeding them GMOs. Three, four, five, six generations. Well, it just takes three generations and turns them sterile. And remember, we want to control the world's population. Sterility from GMO foods is a good way to do that, isn't it? It's kind of like Pottinger's cats. Sterility. All right, so tuck that one away in your heart. And then with a new president and a new agenda, those who are fighting against Monsanto look to President Obama for hope. And the Center for Food Safety asked the United States to reassess its previous decision. Well, in light of the change in administration, in March of 2009, the United States, that is, the U.S. Justice Department, filed a response in California District Court stating that its position has not changed. So the position concerning GMO and the proliferation of it has not changed from George Bush Sr. to Bill Clinton to George Bush Jr. to Barack Obama. They're all the same. They all took their orders from the same outfit, Monsanto, ADM, Cargill, the multinational corporations and food supply giants, Kraft, Nabisco, and so on. And they're right on track, and they're going to continue on with more of it. Now, as I mentioned earlier, if you want to change that, you change your buying habits. And then the second half of the equation is this. I change my buying habits. I don't buy the GMO foods and the products that have GMOs in them. So why is that a problem to me? If the rest of the people of America want to buy GMOs, then why not let them do that? Why would I want to get in here and prevent those people from buying the kind of products that they want? Let's put it this way. You vegetarians out there, you want to buy products with no meat. So what do you care if everybody else out there wants to eat Jimmy Dean pure pork sausage? You know, that isn't a skin off your back, is it? I know you're going to say, yeah, but those people are damaging their bodies. But wake up now, wake up. So what? How does that damage you? Why don't you butt out and mind your own business and let them mind theirs? I just apply that same philosophy here. You know, if you people want to eat GMOs, you know, why don't I just butt out and let you people get on with your lives? No point in me getting in the way. Now, for those of us that don't want it, all right, here's a couple things to remember to do. Tell the supplier when I go into the store and I buy something, or when I don't buy something, I make it a point to tell them. Now, I would like to buy that product, but I don't buy it because it's got pork in it. I don't buy it because it's got fat in it. I don't buy it because it's got GMO. I don't buy it because. And that sends him a signal. Now, if you want to stock that and put it on your shelves, you got to sell it to somebody else. I'm not going to buy it. You lost a customer. That sends them a signal, and it tells them how to buy and how to reorder. Now, when that was done to Walmart, they stopped stocking milk, or they're about to. They sent a notice out to Mid-America Dairies not too long ago, and they said, we're not going to buy any more milk that has RBGH in it. Make sure it doesn't have it, or we ain't buying it. And so that'll tell Mid-America Dairies, hey, listen, our biggest supplier over here, our biggest customer says they ain't going to buy it. And that's a direct result, so says Walmart, of what their customers want. Their customers didn't want it. They wouldn't buy it. And so Walmart said, okay, we're going to phase it out. And Walmart has put in more and more organic foods. And organic is the way people want to go in the country as a general rule. That's where the market is growing the most, and that's where food suppliers are supplying the market. Now, there are people out there that grow non-GMO soybeans and non-GMO corn. So if you would go to Acres USA, just plug in Acres USA. I don't have an address here on my desk. I'm going to tell you where to go. They're in Austin, Texas. Look them up on the web. Google them out. Acres USA. They'll give you the sources of non-GMO organic foods from suppliers that grow it. They can tell you where all the bodies are buried. Now, beneath the public radar, there has been a silent infiltration of GMOs into our food supply with minimal testing and misrepresented results. This company has reorganized nature on a genetic level and then, by all appearances, conspired with their own government, our government, to saturate that food into our food supply without the public input or opinion, much less environmental impact statements, labeling, or regulations. How, by any stretch of the imagination, is this not a serious human rights violation? And what about the thousands of unhappy farmers who have been sued by Monsanto after their GE seeds made their way into the farmer's land? The judge concluded, in short, that it ultimately didn't matter how the genetically altered seeds got onto their land, whether they blew off of a truck or were carried by the wind or brought in by birds or wildlife, the farmers had still infringed upon Monsanto's patent. Now, these poor farmers were then forced to destroy all of their crops and seed storage and so on. Now, Monsanto has contaminated and pursued the destruction of millions of seeds from whence our forefathers bore from the sweat of their brows for generations. Our nation's great farmers nurtured and even risked their lives to cultivate, maintain, and safeguard the quality and purity of our agricultural heritage. This is a blatant travesty to every farmer that has tilled the earth of this fine country. Well, I would take some exception to that. I think that the average Joe Sixpack farmer over here bears some of the guilt, if not all of it. I mean, after all, it's the farmers over here that are buying the seed and planting it, isn't it? Isn't it you farmers out there that have been buying all this chemical fertilizer and putting all these herbicides and pesticides on the crops that you're buying these hybridized seeds? Huh? So to sit there and say, hey, you know, it's Monsanto and it's not us, is like the kettle calling the pot black. And it's about time that we woke up to the problem, and that is chemical agriculture is unsustainable. Organic agriculture is sustainable, and that's where we have to go back. That's what we have to go back to. Now, I'm not naive enough to believe that I'm going to get on some bandwagon over here and convince the Department of Agriculture to change their policy and let's go back to organic agriculture. That isn't going to happen, but I did it. I mean, I practice organic agriculture here on my farm, and I eat the organic produce off of my farm. I sell that to my customer. My customers are happy, and they pay me a premium price, which is what keeps me in business and which keeps me producing organics for my customers, because that's what they want to buy, because they don't want to buy GMOs. And so the marketplace is what keeps me alive. It's what keeps me going. And it's what will keep you going if you're a farmer. It's what will keep you in supplies if you support the farmers that will support you. So you go out and you find an organic farmer, and you support him by buying his produce, buying his milk, buying his tomatoes and so on. And in the process of doing that, you send a signal, a little subliminal signal, to the marketplace. And that signal in the marketplace says, hey, organic is growing, GMOs are not. Now here's what the GMO guys were promising us. Remember they said, we'll produce more food. The results are less. They said, we'll have less chemicals and less pollutants. The answer is it's more. More chemicals and more pollutants. And the ecology, they said, we're going to damage the ecologic balance of nature less. No, they're impacting it more, as is illustrated by the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. There's a piece of real estate down there in the Gulf, totally separate, you know, from the oil spill, which is 36,000 square miles of just dead ocean where nothing can live, because there's no oxygen in the water. And that's because of all the runoff from the chemicals and pesticides that we're flushing down the rivers from Iowa and Nebraska and so on, where we're doing all of our farming, while at the same time we're up there mining the Oglala Aquifer. Remember that? Now, I got 16 reasons why this whole system is going to collapse. Now, listen to this. The dead zone in the Gulf is the canary in the coal mine that tells us that our chemical agriculture is unsustainable. It's 36,000 miles and growing. Just keep on, and you can kill all of the oceans of the world. I think that before we get there, we ought to reevaluate and stop doing that. We're not going to, which is what prompted our Creator to tell us. He said, you know, if I don't come back and stop you fools before it's too late, there will no flesh be saved alive on the planet. And he said that in Matthew 24:22. But he said, for the elect's sake, I'm going to come back and cut it short. That's the good news. The bad news is it isn't going to be Monsanto, the Department of Agriculture, or the Obama administration that's going to make any meaningful change. You can forget that. An example in the world of another canary in the coal mine is the building of the Aswan Dam on the Nile River, the expansion of the deserts in China and Africa, that's the Gobi Desert and the Sahara Desert, by 100 square miles a year each, and the cutting down of 4,000 square miles of Amazon rainforest every year, which has resulted in the Gobi Desert expanding by 100 square miles a year, thus the loss of 100 square miles of agricultural land to grow food on. The same thing is going on in the Sahel of Africa in the expansion of the Sahara Desert. And in the Amazon Basin, cutting down 4,000 square miles a year to convert to agriculture has resulted in a decrease in the rainfall in the forest over 50 years of 25%. That's all moving in the wrong direction. The increase of deserts, the decrease of rainfall in the Amazon, the increase of the dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico is all boding ill for the future. Now let's add to that GMO foods and hybrid seed, which violate Leviticus 19:19. There's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. Then, in the 1960s, we Americans produced 57% of our fruits and vegetables out of the Central Valley of California. Today, half of the food that we eat in this country is being imported. Boys and girls, that's a disaster. That's a catastrophe in the making. And there isn't anybody in Congress that doesn't know what I'm talking about here. They're all educated people. Hell, those people are all informed. They're being lobbied by both sides. The biggest side with the biggest payoff, the biggest bribes, come from the food industry. Comes from Monsanto, ADM, and Cargill. And so the politicians are going to listen to that side because that's where they're getting the biggest payoffs. Now, the way to make that worm turn is when you stop buying the products. Just that simple. It just sends a message to them, just like milk, just like potatoes, just like tomatoes. They quit making the flavor saver tomato and the BT potato and the RBGH milk. And that's because we wouldn't buy it. And so we do the same thing here with the rest of the products. If you see a can of anything or a package that has canola oil or cottonseed oil, or if it has high fructose corn syrup, or if it has any corn products or any soybean products in it, don't buy it. And then tell the supplier, tell the grocer, tell the guy that you're buying it from, this is why I'm not buying this product. Here's what it's got in it. Here's why I'm not buying it. Now, I do that when I go to the dentist and he says, I want to put in a mercury filling, and I tell the guy, no, don't do that. I don't want to buy that. And it sends a message to my dentist. He told me, he said, you know, you're dumb. You're out of touch with reality. You've been given false information. And I said, well, that's fine. What difference does it make to you? You're going to charge me $105 to fill the tooth. Are you telling me that if you put in porcelain, you're going to charge me $95 and save me $10? Because if that's what you're telling me, save your breath, because I don't care about the $10. And if you're going to tell me that, you know, I'm going to get longer service and better use out of the mercury filling, that's fine. That's money in your pocket, because this porcelain's going to wear out sooner, and I'll be back to spend another $105 with you sooner and put more money in your pocket. And that's what I want to buy. And if that isn't what you want to sell me, then I'll go to somebody that'll sell me what I want to buy. That's what I told him. And he saw the wisdom of my argument, and he put in the porcelain, and I haven't heard another word out of him from that point on. Nice guy. I like him. We just have a disagreement over porcelain versus mercury, that's all. And I sent him a pretty strong message. I said, that's what I want to buy, and if that's what you want to sell, I'm here to spend money. If that isn't what you want to sell, then I'm going to find somebody that's got what I want to buy. He who has the gold makes the rules. And Mr. and Mrs. Housewife, or Mr. and Mrs. America, when you walk into the Walmart store, you walk into any supermarket, you vote with your checkbook and credit card at the checkout stand. That's where your vote for GM is registered, right there. When you buy it, you're voting for it. And when you refuse it, you're voting against it. And you don't have to write a letter to anybody. Just don't buy the product. And when they see that product sitting on the shelf and it doesn't move, then they say to themselves, hey, this thing doesn't move very fast, but here's what's really moving. We can't keep this stuff in stock. These open pollinated seeds, this stuff, this organic food, we can't keep that in stock. We're constantly reordering that. And this Kraft mayonnaise over here, we can't give that stuff away. Pretty soon they'll quit stocking it. They'll just quit handling it. That's the way you do that. Now, we just suffered a one-third loss of our fish industry here in the United States. That's a step in the wrong direction down on the Gulf. The destruction of the dollar. Every time our government votes for a new bailout or a new inflationary move, a new deficit spending program, it destroys our dollar. We have to pay for this stuff that we're importing. And when the dollar collapses, nobody's going to sell it to us because our money's no good. We're going to be like the Zimbabweans. Okay, that's a step in the wrong direction. Mining the Oglala Aquifer. We've only got 20 years worth of water left in it. 50% of the food in the country comes from the Midwest, where we're irrigating out of the aquifer. When that thing pumps dry, boys and girls, that's the end of the ride. Wrong direction. Half of our food is now imported. Wrong direction. Wrong direction. We want to reduce that to a quarter, then to 10%, and then to very little. Colony collapse disease with our bees. That's caused by electrical interference in the atmosphere. All these cell towers. All right, that colony collapse disease over here, one-third of agriculture in America is pollinated. One-third of everything that grows here is pollinated by bees. wrong direction here. Chemical farming, pesticides and fertilizers. We adopted that system of farming over organic farming in 1946. There is a move back toward organics. It's too little, too late. You're already past the point of no return. It's promising and it's moving in the right direction, but it's not fast enough and it isn't going to save the day. Farm subsidy programs that benefit corporations, wrong direction. Farm bill programs that are designed to help the family farmer, okay, that's what they tell you. That's the propaganda. That's the deception. That's the deception. That's the white horse of Revelation 6. See, they lie to you and they say this bill is designed to help the family farmer when in reality it isn't. It's designed to help the corporate farmer in opposition to the family farmer. And then we used to have a 71-day supply of food. Now it's down to 38. Boys and girls, we're headed in the wrong direction here. That's bad. And in Revelation 11:18, God says, I'm going to destroy those that destroy the earth. And in Leviticus 26:25, he says, I'm going to avenge the quarrel of my covenant. That's 16 reasons why I can tell you today that the great ship America is on the wrong course. We're headed to catastrophe. I don't believe for a moment we're going to save the great ship America, but we're going to save a lot of people off the boat. And the place to start is with the book Hungry Planet, Genetic Roulette, and Seeds of Deception. Remember, those three books come from Baker Creek Seeds, Mansfield, Missouri. And they're online at heirloomseeds.com, heirloomseeds.com. All right, with that out of the way, then I'm going to give you a final reminder here. Let's see, I got about 10 or 15 more seconds. 10 or 15 more seconds. Let's see if I've got a... Here it is right here. Salem-news.com is where this article comes from. Salem, S-A-L-E-M, -news.com. All right, with that, I'm out of time. I've got to give you a final reminder that you've been listening to The Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School at Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.